Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We all recognize that we are in a housing crisis right now. I think that's acceptable to both left and right. Stakeholders on both sides agree. The problem is, what are we going to do about it? The status quo, we cannot continue with.
If passed, there are no assurance that the low-income Arizonans will be able to benefit from the new units bill because there are zero safeguards or initiatives to ensure that the new units will actually be affordable.
I find it exciting because I do understand the value of representation at the table, but I'm also committed to ensuring that I represent the entirety of the district. I don't want any demographic to feel that I am not representing them.
What I heard time and time again is they wanted somebody who was going to the best of their ability, work with others on the council, work with others in the city, not to be an obstructionist.
My goal is not to regulate drag shows. It's to regulate sexually explicit drag shows and to protect our children.
Trying to redefine drag shows as sexually explicit is a direct attack on marginalized communities.
And with me to talk about the defeat of a measure supporters say would have helped alleviate the affordable housing crisis in the state, the results from this week's runoff elections for Phoenix City Council, and more are Don Penish-Thacker of Agave Strategy. Hey, Don.
Hey there.
And Barrett Marson of Marson Media. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, both of you guys are wearing green. I'm the only party pooper who forgot this morning.
Boo.
So I know. Well, I was up really early, and my brain wasn't functioning properly.
Okay,
nor corned beef sandwich for you.
That's right. I'll have to wait till tomorrow for that. So, Don, let's talk about this bill that was defeated in the Senate this week. Although, you know, by all indications, it seems like there will at least be an attempt to bring it back that would have dealt with affordable housing. We heard just a second ago from one of the critics of it, who basically said, you know, it's important to build, but nothing in this bill would have said that the new units would have been affordable as opposed to not affordable for a vast majority of workers. Do you get the sense this bill is salvageable at this point? Like, can there be a compromise?
Yeah, I think that this is one of those rare and wonderful examples of our legislature, both parties actually coming together to want to work on solutions for real Arizona problems. The problem with this bill, and I think what folks are going to really focus in on addressing now to make it salvageable, are some of those specifics, some of those standards and perhaps mandates that this housing that will supposedly come from it will actually be accessible to lower income individuals, to people who are, you know, working families. Because as it originally stands, the bill guarantees none of that. It was kind of a let's cross our fingers, shut our eyes, and hope that this results in more housing for people. But it lacked any provisions to actually ensure that happens. So that's what folks are now coming together and actually working on, which is great to see in this legislature that has otherwise been miles apart on actual solutions.
Barrett, before we start, we should mention that you've done some work and doing some work for the Multi-Housing Association,
yes,
working on behalf of apartment complexes, mm-hmm. things like that. Do you get the sense that there can be a compromise? I mean, the cities obviously do not like this bill at all because it takes away a lot of their zoning authority. Mm-hmm. Can there be a compromise?
Well, I do believe so, yes, because you have sort of both ends of our political spectrum that's supporting these concepts. Mm-hmm. You have everyone from Chicanos Por La Causa and Equality Arizona to the Goldwater Institute. They all support this. So that's a really good starting place. To Don's point, and I know you played a clip from Senator Tehran earlier, mm-hmm. about this doesn't guarantee affordable housing. The bill mandates 4,000 square foot lots in large cities. Millionaires are not buying 4,000 square foot lots to put a 1,200 square foot home on, right? That's how you get affordable housing. You allow smaller lot sizes, which then lead to smaller units, and that is your workforce housing. That is what very young families and, you know, people who are working two jobs who, you know, barely can afford rent, but this they can also afford. And so I think that's where you get that affordability. Yeah, there's no word affordable. You know, we must have affordable housing. But by building small units or by building vertically, you get that exact concept.
How do the supporters of this bill overcome the opposition of Arizona cities?
You know, the great thing is Senator Steve Geiser is working his tail off.
And has been for like a year on this bill.
You know, he was a co-chairman of a housing supply study committee that didn't just sit in Phoenix and take some testimony. They went to every corner of the state, took testimony from, left groups, right groups, average people, everybody, and crafted this bill. He is committed to working to continue this effort because he understands, and many people understand, this is one of the biggest problems facing Arizona now is our housing crisis. We have 200 people moving to the state every single day. They've got to live somewhere. Building is not keeping up because, let's face it, a lot of regulation at the city level, design review boards and the zoning process. They want to cut it down to about 6 months. And from the year and a half to 2 years it takes now.
Let's not pretend, though, that any singular bill is going to be a silver bullet on this issue. There are a lot of reasons. Yeah, you absolutely do. And so I think that that's why there is actual bipartisan appetite to get into this. But, you know, this is the time. This is the opportunity to craft some specifics, to put some metrics in so that we don't have to just hope that millionaires or billionaires don't come in and buy these. I mean, what's to say these don't become just Airbnbs and, you know, other types of building and ownership that we've seen across the state that has done nothing so far for working families? We need to make sure that doesn't happen. And I think that there is interest on both sides to craft a better bill.
And you know, to that point, though, you know, Steve Geiser has sort of heard that complaint, and one of the things in this bill is it gives property owners the ability to put ADUs, you know, mother-in-law houses.
A guest houses
in the back, in your backyard. And they can, in the bill, specifically cannot be used as a short-term rental. They must be for long-term. So Geiser is open to all kinds of ideas and amendments to get to where we need to be to start building more housing here in Arizona.
Don, let me ask you a glass half empty question, which is that this is a bill, as we've discussed, Democrats and Republicans both understand that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. It's a bill that Senator Geiser and this committee he was leading have worked on for months and months and months. And yet, when it goes up on the board, it still has a lot more opposition than support. So we talked about, is it salvageable? But like, given that this is an issue that pretty much everybody agrees needs to be addressed, it doesn't seem as though there's a lot of agreement on how to specifically address it.
Well, I mean, this is early stages. There's still plenty of time. So I think we're going to be in this legislative session for quite some time.
Come back up in November or something, right?
Sure, maybe. And so there's time to work on, you know, finding middle ground from these interests. If we could actually get one of what should be just one of many solutions to our affordable housing crisis out of this legislative session, that would be a huge win for everyone serving in the legislature and the governor as well. And so I think that people want a win. And more importantly than the politics of it, we need a solution for Arizona families. So, you know, I think they need to dig into it. People are going to have to give a little ground. People are going to have to, you know, say that there's going to have to be a mix of crossing our fingers and shutting our eyes and hoping for the best, but actual words on paper to help make sure it results in the outcomes that we say we're going for.
And one thing I'm in 100% agreement with Dawn on is this legislature will not be ending anytime soon. There'll be days and days full of nothing. So plenty of time for them to work on a solution to, quite frankly, the biggest problem. Well, that and, of course, drag shows. two of Arizona's biggest problems.
So we're talking about cities. Barrett, let me start with you on city elections, some runoff elections in two parts of Phoenix. Kevin Robinson will be succeeding Sal DeCicco, who is term limited out. Keisha Hodge Washington defeated the incumbent Carlos Garcia in the 8th District, kind of downtown South Phoenix. Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego had endorsed both of those candidates. She basically now has the council that she wants, doesn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the council she wants, and hopefully she uses it to her – or I don't know about hopefully, but she should use it to her advantage. You know, that's what you do when you get this majority. I do think, you know, you've lost a couple of voices on, you know, both ends of the spectrum. Sal was always needling from the right, and Carlos Garcia was always needling from the far left, right? So I think you've got you lose those voices, and, you know, for Sam Stone, you know, you tie your you hitch your star to carry or you hitch your wagon to carry Lake Star, and it turns out that's not such a good move.
Don, does this put pressure on Mayor Gallego now to really get stuff done, given that she it seems like there are, really aren't any excuses anymore?
Yes, absolutely. This is one of those situations where we will see whether this is a blessing or a curse to her political career and ambitions, because, you know, there's a kind of safety and luxury in being able to say, I have all these visions and plans, and if only this body would allow me to enact them. Well, now she has the body that's, you know, allegedly is there to enact exactly what she wants. So now the proof will be in the pudding. We will see what her plans consist of, what actual impact they will have, and, you know, whether she has actually, you know, for these new council members, whether they are sticking to their campaign promises of not being a rubber stamp and truly wanting to represent their areas, or whether they are there for that sole purpose. And that will define their careers going forward as well.
And you know, just one thing, and we'll figure this out in the next few weeks, I guess, but, you know, now that Mayor Gallego has a true governing majority, do some of the more progressive members decide, I'm out and I'm going to run for the congressional seat being vacated by Ruben Gallego,
right,
who's going to run for senator?
A couple of them are already thinking about it,
absolutely,
at least.
Absolutely. I think you'll see someone like Laura Pastor exit stage left to run for that seat, and maybe
least.
Others.
Right? Yeah.
So is it, Don, is it fair to call this? There's been a lot of said how this is sort of a centrist council, a middle-of-the-road council. Is that a fair label, do you think?
I think that's a fair label. There have also been labels such as corporate and other more harsh criticism. But yeah, by the looks of it all, I mean, when you're starting to look at, you know, Laura Pastor is now occupying the furthest left, you know, wing of a council, then you know that you've got a very centrist, moderate council. And so we will see what they do and exactly which plans get that full buy-in versus, you know, some of the mayor's possible hopes and visions that the new council members or the exiting ones see as an opportunity for them to differentiate themselves.
Will these corporate Democrats allow more housing?
Well, we need more housing, but
this will
it needs
be one
to
of
be
the
right
questions.
Kind.
My guests this week are Barrett Marson of Marson Media and Don Penish Thacker of Agave Strategy. Guys, let's talk a little bit about the death penalty, always an uplifting topic. there's some controversy now because the state Supreme Court has issued a warrant of execution for Aaron Gunches, and Katie Hobbs and Chris Mays don't want to carry out the execution. This week, we saw Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell, as well as some GOP legislative leaders file with the state Supreme Court, basically to compel Governor Hobbs and the state to carry out this execution. Barrett, how do you see this playing out ultimately? Is this something the court, you think, will force the state to do?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, for me and, you know, geeks like me and probably Don, this is so interesting in a sort of separation of powers issue. It is going to be fascinating to watch where the court does say, look, our warrant is not a suggestion. It is an order. And we may go back and forth on the date. All right. I believe, you know, Director Thornell said, you know, we just aren't ready. Well, all right. Will you be ready?
April 6th, I think, is the date.
April 6th. Will you be ready June 6th? How about June 6th? Can I get you a June 6th? Can I get you into this June 6th execution? So I think that it will be quite interesting. I mean, this is certainly a Republican or conservative court, but some of your most conservative members have recused themselves, notably Bill Montgomery. So I think it's going to be just fascinating to watch how this does play out in front of the Supreme Court. And, you know, Katie Hobbs, of course, has made half of her career really about following the rule of law and, you know, being sort of, you know, adherence to the court is the most important thing. So I'm going to be just fascinated to watch this.
Yeah, Don, it's interesting to Barrett's point about the separation of powers, because both the governor and attorney general have said, okay, you know, it's great the Supreme Court issued the execution. That allows us to carry it out. It doesn't require us to, whereas County Attorney Mitchell and Speaker Toma and President Peterson are saying, no, you got to do it.
Yeah. So the esoteric political, you know, government question there will be interesting to watch. I think, you know, bring it down a couple echelons. Politically and practically, there's two other things going on there. This isn't election denialism, but it is in some ways denialism of what winning an election means. So this is the elected governor. This is the elected attorney general. What does it mean that they are both saying our scope and purview says that we don't have to do this? We cannot pretend that some of this isn't partisanship and, you know, just parties needling each other or the Republican Party needling a Democratic governor and attorney general now over this. And then, you know, let's not forget these are lives. These are families who, you know, had a victim, the inmate himself. It is the Arizona Department of Corrections is notorious for being underfunded, understaffed, under-equipped, and poorly run for a long time already. So just practically, I think it's reasonable to be able to say, look, we need to understand what's going on and whether we can carry out a constitutional execution or botch it like we have as a state for the past decade plus. And so let's not forget that there are actual human beings here. We have an actual constitution that says that this is supposed to go smoothly. And then us, you know, politico geeks can get to sit back and watch where the separation of powers truly falls.
You know, Mark, one thing, I attended 4 executions when I worked at the Arizona Department of Corrections back in the early 2009, 2010 timeframe. I will say, you know, watching that up close, the Department of Corrections members, employees who are involved in the execution process take it very seriously. They are, for the most part, just regular correctional officers or, you know, line staff who volunteer. You cannot be forced to participate in an execution. And they take it very seriously. It's a solemn duty that they do have to carry out this ultimate punishment. So, I am confident that there is a lot of professionalism. You know, there is some, you know, there has been issues, say, with the IV team.
They've had problems carrying had out issues, in the past, yeah.
With the IV team. And so correcting that is probably the biggest thing. And then, of course, the drugs. You know, the drug protocol has changed since I was there. It was a 2 or 3 drug protocol during my time there, and now it's 1 drug. And so getting access to that and ensuring that is going to be going to do the job, essentially, that it's effective, is an important aspect to this as well.
All right. This is going to be an extraordinarily awkward transition, but I'm going to attempt to make it anyway. Barrett, you had brought up drag shows as being a pretty high profile, a high priority issue for the state. Legislators, of course, continue to talk about this issue. The Senate passed a couple of bills this week dealing with them. Don, how much of this is, and I hate to use this phrase because I think it's become more of a cliche now, but how much of it is political theater, knowing that even if these bills pass the legislature, the governor is going to veto them? How much of it is just kind of proving a point, and how much is actually like trying to solve what these legislators see as a problem?
It is 0% solving problems. The way you phrased it, that legislators are talking about this, yeah, that's pretty much the only people talking about this and seeing this as a worthwhile way to be spending their time and our tax dollars that pay their meager but still salaries. This is fodder for mailers and campaign fundraising emails to the base on the part of the Republicans who are pushing this forward, knowing full well that it is going nowhere and will be vetoed. And so, you know, folks like me, I don't want to see them spending time on this when we have a water crisis, a housing crisis, an opioid crisis, all of which are not getting their due time because we're worrying about a problem that doesn't exist.
And, you know, I guess I'm spending probably a bit more time in my house than I should have because I didn't realize there were all these flash mobs of drag shows going on just out in public.
Get out more, Barrett.
Seriously, I really do. You know, look, this is this is a solution where there is zero problem, and it's not even a great solution. This is not a problem that I want. I'm going to echo Don that I want my legislators really focused on. There are so many other issues that Arizona faces. Drag queens with children, drag shows are just not a problem. I'm going to be with Carrie Lake on this. Drag, you know, we should support drag shows.
oh, geez. Well, so, but here's the question then, because it's not just Arizona. This is a national thing that legislatures in many, many states are talking about this kind of issue. But if, to both of your points, nobody outside the capitals are talking about it, politicians don't want to spend a lot of time on issues that their voters don't care about.
That's an issue because the conservative, the far right base, the MAGA mm-hmm. base of Republicans, that strong 30-40%, they do care. They do think that schools are being overrun by drag queens. they've got to get out more as well, clearly. They do believe that the drag queen issue is a big national problem that will bring down the country. I don't see it. I don't think it's a problem, and we should move on. But I'm not.
They're clearly not listening to you.
No.
Well, and Dawn, I think to Barrett's point, and you reference this also. It's sort of a fundraising, send letter to the consumers. Hey, I'm trying to fight for this kind of thing.
Yes, this is born out of far right think tanks that, you know, are very good at figuring out what issues or what, you know, imagine problems they can seed out into discourse to rile up and anger the base ahead of elections next year. And so in that way, it's just like CRT, which is also not being taught in schools in Arizona, but is, you know, this hot topic. So it's an invented problem coming out of think tanks that are very good at figuring out what lies they can push to voters to get them mad enough to make sure they vote and then be open to, you know, some of the other talking points that are going to be coming. So this is the most cynical of all kind of political maneuvering, but you know,
I disagree with Dawn. I don't think this is coming out of think tanks. I just don't think there's a lot of thinking going on this issue in these bills. So,
all right. So, guys, we've got about 30 seconds left. So let's talk sports. U of A, of course, unfortunately for U of A fans, lost yesterday in the NCAA tournament. Today, both ASU and Grand Canyon play. Will either of them win, Dawn?
Oh, ASU.
ASU will win?
I just can't believe that ASU is in the tournament and U of A is no longer.
Not. Yeah, that's a lot of ASU fans are pretty happy about that.
Right,
even if it's just a quirk of scheduling, right?
Right, right. Even if ASU loses, they went. You know, they stayed in the tournament longer.
Well, and they won their first four games too, so they technically won a tournament.
They
game.
Technically are have a better record than U of A. It's a shame for all those U of A people I have to run into at the Capitol.
I'm not crying.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. That is Barrett Marson of Marson Media, Dawn Penich-Thacker of Agave Strategy. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.